Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, November 24th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Stinging Nettle Botanics, Main Street, Catskill, New York, offering handcrafted organic herb-based products incorporating their natural herbal remedies for holiday gift-giving. StingingNettleNY.com. We're joined today by Dr. Sunny Antwala, a leading preventive cardiologist with Northwell Health in the Hudson Valley, specializing in cholesterol management, cardiac imaging, and heart disease prevention. We'll be discussing, among many other things, the importance of keeping your lipid numbers in line. Hopefully the doc will have a couple of tips for me. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday. And today we welcome Dr. Sunny Antwala, a leading preventive cardiologist with Northwell Health in the Hudson Valley, specializing in cholesterol management, cardiac imaging, and heart disease prevention. He trained at Brown University and earned his MBA from Columbia Business School. Dr. Antwala cares for thousands of patients each year and is passionate about helping people live longer, heart-healthy lives. To participate in the discussion, all you got to do is call 800-348-2551. That's the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Dr. Sunny Antwala, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me back, Ray. Really excited to be here.
You know, I'm not sure that I have ever seen the letters MBA in a doctor's bio for this program. Why did you go for an MBA?
So people ask why a cardiologist would go to business school. Outside of being a geek, for me, it was simple. Clinically, I can help one patient at a time, but with systems level thinking, operations, and leadership training, I can help thousands. My goal is to be a physician advocate, to build programs that prevent disease, not just treat it, to help shape a healthier system, not just healthier individuals. That's why I went to Columbia, to make a bigger impact.
Well, that's certainly one heck of a student bill that you're probably still paying to this day if you got an MD and you got an MBA. So let's get down to business here on this Medical Monday. Preventive cardiology. First of all, what do you do? What can be done and what cannot be done?
Sure, that's a great question. I mean, let's start with the basics. When I think of prevention, I think about the foundational building blocks, which is exercise and eating a healthy cardiac diet. As a cardiologist, we often think about cholesterol, and I think that's where we can make the biggest impact. So let's start with cholesterol basics. You know, we know cholesterol itself is not the enemy. You need cholesterol. It makes hormones. It builds cell membranes. And the issue is when the LDL, which is quote-unquote the bad cholesterol, becomes too high. You can think of LDL as small particles floating around your bloodstream. When these particles become elevated, they slip into the artery wall, get oxidized, trigger inflammation, and over years or decades, they create plaque. And this plaque eventually ruptures and causes heart attacks and strokes. Now, the goal isn't zero cholesterol. The goal is to keep LDL low enough so plaque never builds or ruptures. You know, 80% of heart disease is preventable, and this is one of the most modifiable risk factors that patients and your audience should know about.
All right. Well, let's talk about ways that you can mitigate this or maybe not make it better, but keep it from getting worse. What are your number one, two, and three pieces of ammunition to get your patients healthier?
Sure, absolutely. Again, I always tell my patients the foundation is exercise and a good, healthy cardiac diet. So I recommend 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise weekly. And what does moderate intensity mean? You know, if I tell my patients, if I call you and you're on the treadmill, you should be only able to tell me one or two words, and you should not be able to talk to me in full sentences. So at a moderate pace for at least 30 minutes, 5 days a week, a healthy, balanced cardiac diet. I recommend the Mediterranean diet. Again, think lean meats, olive oils, antioxidant foods to help you. So that, you know, that's table stakes. And then a lot of your cholesterol is genetically mediated. And, you know, even though we exercise and diet, your bad cholesterol can still be elevated. And so treatment options for this, there's statins, which have been around since the 1980s. There's several of them. We know that, you know, since they've come out, these cholesterol-lowering medications, they work in the liver. They prevent the buildup of cholesterol. And the high-intensity cholesterol medications, which are generally atorvastatin and rosuvastatin, Lipitor and Crestor, at high doses, those can reduce your bad cholesterol by 50%. So that's my number one go-to. The second one is ezetimibe, which is a medication that you, or Zetia. It's a medication that you take, and it prevents the absorption of cholesterol from your blood. That reduces your bad cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, by about 15%. Over the years, there's a new medication that's come out called bempedoic acid, or Nexlizet. That also works on the liver, but doesn't get into your muscle cells. That also reduces your cholesterol by about 20%. And then lastly, you know, we have two additional options, which are injectable medications, and they work by lowering your bad cholesterol, again, by just causing more receptors on your cells. Think of like a vacuum for the bad cholesterol. There are PCSK9 inhibitors. Names of those are Repatha and Praluent. They reduce your bad cholesterol by about 60%. And most recently, they've come out with a medication called Leqvio, or inclisiran, where you get an injection. Once you're loaded with that medication, you come in twice a year, and that also lowers your bad cholesterol by about 50%. So as you can see, we have a lot of tools to get the bad cholesterol down, which is the LDL cholesterol.
All right, Dr. Sunny Antwal is our guest today, a leading preventive cardiologist with Northwell Health. All right, we talked a little about LDL, the so-called bad cholesterol. What makes HDL the good cholesterol?
So you can think of HDL as a vacuum that goes around and helps, you know, as you helps get rid of some of that LDL. And so you can have, and this is your good cholesterol, your HDL, ideally your HDL cholesterol, a good level is between 60 to 90. So if you're above 60, that's actually a benefit for you. And that's actually a protector in your body of laying down plaque deposition. Your good cholesterol, a lot of people don't know this, can actually be too high. So greater than 90, it's almost a J curve in terms of the events that happen. So from 60 to 90, it's protective. But then if your good cholesterol is too high over 90, there's some sort of cholesterol dysregulation, and then your risk starts to increase.
Now, is that a common thing to have good cholesterol that is too high?
It is uncommon. I would say it's a few percentage points, but I do have some patients that are doing everything right, but their good cholesterol is very high, and they're coming in with heart events.
When you go ahead.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Well, right. When you take a statin and it lowers the bad cholesterol, is it also having an effect? In other words, can you lower your good cholesterol at the same time?
So in terms of your good cholesterol, and this is a good question, in the 80s and 90s, there was a medication called niacin. And we all thought in the cardiology community that artificially raising your HDL, your good cholesterol, would be good and prevent heart events. Unfortunately, we realized that wasn't the case, and patients were at increased risk for stroke. So we no longer recommend this medication, niacin. Your HDL is really determined genetically, and then exercise and diet and things like that can improve it a little bit.
We're joined by Dr. Sunny Ntwala from Northwell Health. He is a preventive cardiologist. Very quickly, we got to take a break here in a couple of minutes, and then we'll get to the phones and the emails. 800-348-2551 is the number if you want to call in, or voxpop@wamc.org. Very quickly, before we take this break, let's just talk about cardiac imaging and sort of how it has morphed and improved over the last 20, 30 years. What can you see now that you couldn't see in the old days, and why is it important?
Sure, absolutely. We see patients on the table, after they get their cardiac stents. But we realize that with imaging, over time, what happens is, your heart is a pump and you have three blood vessels that supply it with blood, oxygen, nutrients, those three pipes. And those three pipes, if you cut them in half, cholesterol kind of builds up around the edges. And over time, it calcifies. So what we realize is that we can take a quick CT scan of those blood vessels to see if there's any calcium or glunk in the blood vessels that supply your heart. And that's called a calcium score. Most institutions offer this throughout the country. It's usually about $100 to $150 out of pocket. But once we get that number, we can identify any patient of their risk and really see where their risk is compared to everyone else, their age and gender. And so if you have a family history of heart disease and you know that, mom, dad had heart attacks in their 40s or 50s, highly recommend for my patients with strong family history to get a calcium score just to see where they are. Are they starting to build up plaque where they are? And then there's more advanced, what I'm most excited about is if you take that a little bit further. So the calcium score is just a quick picture of your heart. Do you have calcium? Do you not? The coronary CTA, which is kind of a more advanced CT scan, can really identify each blood vessel that you have and then identify if there's a significant blockage or not without going into the arteries like we do today when you get a stent. And so you're able to identify the anatomy, see where the blockage is, see what type of blockage it is, the percent blockage it is. And now with some of these AI tools, we're able to say and identify, is this a high-risk plaque? Is this something that we should be worried about? And so that gives us a clear picture and a roadmap to figure out where heart disease is, where you are in the process, and how we can prevent the next heart attack.
Dr. Sunny Ntwala is our guest. Doc, we got to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. On the other side of this break, we will get to the phones and the emails. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We're joined via the telephone and a very good connection, too, from Dr. Sunny Ntwala, a preventive cardiologist with Northwell Health. And let's go to the email bag before we jump over to the phones. This one is from Lou in New Paltz. I get out of breath when I bend over. Everyone seems to poo-poo the issue, but I think it's not so normal, is it? My pulmonologist didn't take it at all seriously, and that's from Lou in New Paltz.
All right. So I get this question often. Lou, I appreciate the question. I really need to know a little bit more detail. The issue when you're short of breath, the question is, at least from a cardiologist standpoint, is there a component of heart failure? So what is heart failure, whether your heart is squeezing appropriately or relaxing appropriately? And sometimes people have problems with one, both, and people that do have a symptom of heart failure is shortness of breath. And they actually have a term for this called bendopnea. You bend over, you're short of breath. And sometimes for my patients, I just prescribe them a low dose of a diuretic and it helps. Huh. The second thing is you could be out of shape, right? Are you deconditioned to the point, where just bending over and doing some of these activities can cause some shortness of breath? So I would recommend following up with your primary care doctor and your cardiologist and pulmonologist to figure this out.
I've never met Lou. I don't know him from Adam. But let's just assume that Lou is very out of shape. When you, Dr. Sunny Ntwala, a preventive cardiologist, say to Lou, "Hey, Lou, you got to get in shape," isn't it dangerous to go headlong into a physical fitness conditioning program if you have been on a couch for 15, 20 years?
Yeah, so I get this all the time. Hey, doc, is it safe for me to exercise? And so, if patients are having symptoms, shortness of breath, chest pain, sometimes that's a marker of heart disease. And so oftentimes I'll get them on a treadmill and I'll do an exercise stress test to make sure that their heart is okay and safe before they proceed, before they run their next marathon. And so from there, I'll take that information and I'll help them build an exercise prescription, essentially to get them into the shape that they want.
Mm-hmm. This email from JD at Diamond Point. What does the good doctor think of the reports that GLP-1 medications reduce lipid levels and help realign the body's metabolic systems while they treat not just diabetes, but heart disease and obesity? And that's from JD in Diamond Point.
All right, JD, thank you so much for the question. GLP-1 meds are the new sexy medications for 2025 here. And honestly, on the ground, I'm seeing remarkable results. So we have, your Wegovy, which is, your Ozempic-like medication. You can lose about 15% of your body weight. And Zepbound, that you can lose up to 20%. And so I'm seeing significant benefits in patients that are losing, 40, 50, 60 pounds. And their metabolic profile is completely changing. Their cholesterol is coming down. Their weight's coming down. They're off diabetes medications. They're off blood pressure medication. So it's a remarkable drug. The way it works is I tell my patients it essentially puts you in a hibernation state. Think of yourself as a bear in hibernation. A lot of people that take these medications, their appetites are suppressed. They're not hungry. They forget to drink water throughout the day. Like a bear in hibernation, if you ever were to stop these medications, you become very hungry, and oftentimes patients will gain their weight back over the subsequent year. And you find, I've had my patients tell me that, for whatever reason, their insurance didn't pay for it. They find themselves in the pantry and they just can't stop eating.
A couple questions on that, Doc, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
If you are tethered to this medication for life, in addition to possible long-term side effects that we don't even know about yet, which I won't even bother you with, are you philosophically okay with tethering somebody to a GLP-1 or any kind of medication forever?
That's a great question. And as a preventive cardiologist, I always hesitate to start my patients on them that are new to me, but oftentimes I'm reaching for these medications in my patients that are diabetic, and I've seen them at 250 pounds. A year later, they're 275. The next year, they're 300. Diabetes is out of control. They've had a heart attack. And despite me saying all these things, because it's hard to lose weight, and it's hard to do all the right things to effectively lose weight, even though folks are trying, and they show me on their apps, they're exercising, they're doing everything, they're like, doc, I just can't lose the weight. I'm reaching for these GLP medications definitely in those patients. And patients that have a relatively good BMI, anywhere between, they're still overweight from BMI between 25 and 30, I really encourage my patients to try to exercise, do high-intensity interval training to really adjust their diet before starting a medication that they may potentially have to be on forever.
Dr. Sonny Ntwala joins us. It's Preventive Cardiology Today on Medical Monday. 800-348-2551 is our number. Let's jump to the phones. We'll go back to the email bag in a little bit. Joe is in Chestertown. Joe, go.
Hi. Two quick questions. I'm on atorvastatin, and then I was prescribed Repatha by a different doctor, but I didn't ask if I should stop the atorvastatin. Would it be possible to be taking both of these?
Hey, Joe, thank you so much for the question, and thank you for joining us as well. A lot of people are on both of these drugs, and we have a recent trial that just came out a few weeks ago. Joe, if you're comfortable sharing, have you had a heart attack or a stroke?
No, but it's quite prevalent in the male side of my family.
Okay, great. So, there was this trial. It was called Vesalius CV. Again, it's a groundbreaking trial that was just released, and it was the first major study taking a look at these PCSK9 inhibitors, Repatha, and people who've never had a heart attack or stroke. So these are high-risk prevention patients like yourself, maybe family history. And in this trial, there were 12,000 patients that were followed. And their bad cholesterol, I don't know what yours is, Joe, but it dropped from a baseline of 90. Let's say you were on atorvastatin, and adding the Repatha dropped their bad cholesterol to 30, roughly in the 20s. And there was a 23% risk reduction in major cardiovascular events, which is huge, right? It can show it, this
Very
was the
promising.
first trial that can show that you can prevent the first heart attack, not just the second. So,
Okay, another quick question. My calcium score is 295. Will these drugs possibly help me reduce that, or is that there forever?
Unfortunately, that's there forever, but you are at high risk with a calcium score of 295. And so, keeping your cholesterol, the lower the better, in terms of early prevention. We know that from this trial and several other trials, deeply lowering your LDL cholesterol with both the statin and the PCSK9 inhibitor leads to less heart attacks, less strokes, and it's extremely safe to do so.
Joe, thank
So
oh, go ahead.
kudos to your doctor for putting you on both.
Joe, thanks for the call. It's Dr. Sonny and Twala today from Northwell Health. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. I've asked almost every cardiologist on this show over the last 15 whatever years, why have they not been able to come up with some sort of medication that can remove some of these calciums? I mean, from the calcium is in the arteries or the veins? I can't remember.
It's in the arteries.
All
and
right.
That's a great. Go ahead, please.
No, go. It seems to me that we can do everything else. Why can't we decalcify the inside of these arteries?
Well, we know with some of these PCSK9 studies and this advanced cardiac CTA imaging is that when we do the calcium score, that's the hard plaque that we're measuring. That plaque is also soft for a number of months to years, right? And so can we have an effect there? And we know that if you keep your LDL cholesterol, your bad cholesterol less than 70, there is some signs of reversal of some of that plaque.
Huh.
But we don't have anything in, we don't have anything in 2025 that's going to reverse it completely. But these trials do show that if you have your cholesterol level below 70, below 55, there is reduction in plaque volume, which is really exciting. And as a preventive cardiologist, what I want to do is I want to get to the patients that are at high risk at the age of 40. And I have a lot of people that have a strong family history, and I'm keeping their cholesterol levels well below 50, and I'm preventing their first heart event. I don't want, like our previous caller, his calcium score was 295. If I were to get to him 20 years earlier, maybe he wouldn't be at 295. Maybe his calcium score would be 5 or remain 0. That's
Amazing.
My hope.
We're joined by Dr. Sonny and Twala today, a preventive cardiologist with Northwell Health in the Hudson Valley. The number is 800-348-2551. John is in North Canaan, Connecticut. John, you're on.
Yeah, hi, thanks. So I'm 60, and I've been seeing a cardiologist for a number of years, and my numbers are all dialed in, but I do like to keep up to date on the latest tests, and I read somewhere an APOB test. I think I read it in AARP magazine or something. Is that a newer test, or are there newer tests that I should be aware of and ask my cardiologist about?
Sure, absolutely. Great question. So, we've been measuring LDL, quote unquote, the bad cholesterol for a long period of time. When you get your regular cholesterol panel checked, that number is actually calculated. It's not the direct measurement. And we've shown through science that a better measurement of that would be APO, the number of particles, which is your ApoB. That's a more accurate measure of your bad cholesterol, but it's been 20, 30 years of us just having this out there, and most studies require the LDL cholesterol. So for my patients that have very high levels of LDL cholesterol or a strong family history, I am checking their ApoB levels. I want to make sure that those are controlled. Those are pretty much in line with your LDL cholesterol. So it's not like you're missing too much, but in certain patient populations you are. Then other tests that I'm getting, and I think everyone should have this tested at least once in your life, is a marker called lipoprotein A. This is a genetic form of cholesterol. You don't earn it, you inherit it. It can accelerate plaque buildup, and it's a major driver of early heart disease. About 20 to 30% of people have elevated lipoprotein A levels. So one in five people have an elevated level in this country. And we are recommending that it's checked at least once. Right now, we don't have FDA-approved meds to lower it, but therapies are coming. There's a trial that we're waiting on. Hopefully, it will be released next year to show us that if we can reduce the lipoprotein A levels by 80 to 90%, maybe we'll have reduction in cardiovascular outcomes. And this will transform how we treat genetic risk. So if you have a family history of early heart disease, especially, you know, if you're under the age of 55 in men or 65 in women, I strongly recommend that you get your lipoprotein A checked at least once in your life.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Email here from Mary in Hadley. Mary writes, I'm just curious about my cholesterol numbers. I'm 70, weigh 108 pounds, exercise regularly, and my numbers are total cholesterol 189. Triglycerides 100, LDL 75, HDL 94. Is this good? Thanks from Mary.
All right. Mary, those are excellent. Your weight seems, your BMI seems excellent. Your LDL profile, I'm not sure if that's on medications. You know, LDL is 75, which is great. Triglycerides are in line. Your HDL is, you know, 60 to 90. You have benefits. You're right there at 94. So I'm not too concerned. So, you know, for my patients that are really worried, I say take a look under the hood if you're doing everything right. But I would recommend, even in a 75-year-old that's really wanting to see if there's any plaque that's building up, I would get a calcium score just so we can see how much plaque is building up. And an LDL cholesterol of 75 is great if someone has a calcium score of zero, but if someone's calcium score is 300-400 plus, I would aim for a lower LDL.
All right. And Catherine writes in, how can you help patients who cannot take statins?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Anecdotally, a lot of people complain of muscle aches and symptoms on them, and I often re-challenge them with another medication, another statin type to see, and oftentimes that helps patients. But in 2025, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of tools, right? So there's a lot of non-statin options, from bempedoic acid, ezetimibe, the PCSK9 inhibitors, and an injection every 6 months called inclisiran or Leqvio. So lots of different options for people that that are not able to tolerate statin therapy. But in my experience, if you're having difficulty with one statin, switching to another one often helps. You know, statins are everywhere. They're generic. They're cheap. They've been studied since the 80s. We have a lot of trial data on them. So I like to try to keep my patients on statins if they're able to tolerate. If not, I got a lot of other tools to use.
Dr. Sunny Ntwala is our guest, a preventive cardiologist with Northwell Health. Let's do one more call, doctor, and then we'll take another break, and then we'll get to as many calls and emails as we can here in the remaining 25 minutes of the show. Let's go to Matamoras, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on.
Does flaxseed oil dissolve plaque in arteries?
No, it does not. I tell my patients, you know, and this brings me to what a lot of my patients ask me in terms of supplements. They bring in a lot of stuff. They show me Amazon reviews. You know, a lot of these supplements in randomized control trials, which is the best trials that we have in our science scientific community, have not shown benefit of a lot of supplements. I always tell my patients it's better out of the plate than the bottles, and to save their money for heart health.
Thank you.
Jim, thanks for the call. We'll take a quick break here with Dr. Sunny Ntwala from Northwell Health. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Back in a flash. Thank you. Man, I've been on a Henry Mancini kick the last week or so. Zach the engineer nods, resigned in a kind of, well, you know, I like the music, man. It's from Peter Gunn. It's all right. It's medical. I'm sorry, Zach. We'll snap it up next time. Yeah, you sure? Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the number. Our guest is Dr. Sonny Ntwala, leading preventive cardiologist with Northwell Health in the Hudson Valley. Tell you what, one more email here, and then we'll jump back to the phones. Joanne in Queensbury, you're next, so don't run. Eric in Saugerties writes, she's already on? Are you already on?
Hello?
Hello, who is this?
This is Deborah.
I didn't press any buttons, Deborah. I don't even see you on the screen. Well, this is weird. All right, well, you're on with Dr. Sonny Ntwala. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. So I've been plant-based vegan for years, and I took a CT scan. It's zero. I have a LPA of 95, and my cholesterol is 197, and LDL is 100. So what do I do? What can I do to lower it?
Hi, Deborah. Can you thank you so much for joining us. Can you repeat what your lipoprotein A is?
95.
And do you know if that's milligrams per deciliter or nanomoles?
It's the NML.
It's the N. Okay, got it. So that, from my standpoint, puts you so congratulations. That's your calcium score is zero, your LDL cholesterol is at 100, and your lipoprotein A is in that gray area. So, you know, having it, unfortunately, there's two different labs that you can go to. And so that's why I asked what measurement it was. Mm-hmm. But you're mm-hmm. Above 75, which is high, but you're not very high, which is above 125. So you're in that gray area between 75 and 125. And so if your calcium score is zero, I would recommend exercise, diet. We know that the lower your LDL cholesterol is throughout your lifetime, I think of it as almost like as patients that are smoking, right? How many years have you smoked and how long have you been exposed to cigarettes? And so that's the way I look at cholesterol. Your cholesterol is not sky high. If you want, and what I have my patients do is I have them sometimes get a carotid ultrasound to look for plaque, soft plaque. If it's not in if your calcium score is zero, again, remember that's the hard plaque. That's the stuff that's been sitting there over some time. Sometimes we're able to pick up soft plaque in your carotid artery. So an ultrasound taking pictures of the blood vessels that lead to the brain. You know, if I'm seeing some soft plaque there, that could give me an indication to say, hey, there is some cholesterol building up. And so maybe you should be on a cholesterol lowering medication. So although your lipoprotein A is elevated, it's moderately elevated, you're in that gray zone. So exercise and diet are still very important. I would talk to your provider about imaging just to take a look for soft plaque. And then you can always reevaluate your calcium score in another 5 to 10 years. That's what I recommend for some of my patients. They're like, hey, doc, I'm exercising. I'm doing all the right things. My cholesterol is okay, but my lipoprotein A is high. What do I do here, right? And so I just, at every 5 years, we repeat if they're interested and they want to know if they're building up plaque, we can repeat imaging to see where their risk is, see if anything has changed.
All right, Debbie, I don't know how you did it, what trick you have to get on the air, but that was pretty impressive, and I hope we helped you out there. 800-348-2551. Eric in Saugerties writes, what is your opinion about the effects of eating egg yolk, for example, on dietary cholesterol? Is it still advisable to avoid eating whole eggs?
All right. So this question has been ongoing, for the longest time. I tell my patients everything in moderation, right? So it's one thing if you've had heart attacks and strokes and your cholesterol is high and you're trying to get it down. I would say eating 1 to 2 eggs a day is fine. If you're eating, I have bodybuilders that are going through 12 of them a day. That's a little much. So I tell my patients everything in moderation. Eggs aren't terrible for you, but you have to be mindful and everything. You have to put everything into context. You know, where are you in terms of your disease, but your risk for disease? Yeah. How much calcium and plaque do you have? Where is your cholesterol level? And what are we doing to prevent heart disease? So again, eggs, eggs are good. They have good protein, just everything in moderation.
Our guest today is Dr. Sunny Ntwala, a preventive cardiologist with Northwell Health. Now we're going to go to Joanne in Queensbury, assuming somebody doesn't have another magic trick to get on the air. Joanne, is that you?
This is me, Joanne.
You're on.
My question is, I had a heart attack in January. I'm 80 years old. I took the recommendation of other people in my family that garlic was helpful for that. That's what I'd been taking over the years, but I had a heart attack in January. So I have my grandmother and grandfather died. I think it's what I have is genetic. My father had high cholesterol. My mother did not. I'm hearing lately that this CRISPR is able to remove that genetic, the gene that causes cholesterol. I think it's they do it with a pill. Have you been talking about that today?
That's DNA work, right? I don't know. Doc, what do you think?
Yes. Hi, Joanne. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'm sorry that you had your heart attack. I'm glad you're still here with us today. Yes. You talk about CRISPR. I'm really excited about these therapies. They're in the research phase right now. There's a company called Verve Therapeutics out of Boston that I believe they're doing work with Eli Lilly, trying to, change our DNA, especially for the really high-risk patients. You're talking about those patients. I don't think that's you, Joanne. These are patients that have heart attacks in their teenage years or in their early 20s with sky-high cholesterol levels, right? And so they're studying the highest-risk patients first. But if you look 15, 20 years down the line, this is what we're talking about. If you're born with a genetic marker that puts the bad cholesterol through the roof and you're at risk for having heart attacks in your teens, 20s, 30s, this is something that may be a treatment option. It's going to be for the highest risk patients first, and then it will trickle down to the rest of us. Fortunately, you made it to 80, and this is your first heart attack. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
Yeah, so we're building up plaque in our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and we don't walk out of this life alive, right? And heart disease is the number one cause of death, and so oftentimes you're building up enough plaque where you're starting to see events in your 70s and 80s, I would recommend for you to make sure that you're on a high intensity cholesterol medication, getting your bad cholesterol less than 55. Okay, your LDL goals should be less than 55. And there's several treatment options that I've discussed over the past 30, 40 minutes here to make sure that we prevent your next heart event.
Joanne, thanks a lot for the call. Well, doctor, if you have one heart event, what are the odds that you will have another heart event?
Yeah, these are, that's a great question, right? Once you have your first heart event, you're at your highest risk from having the next one within the first year. So it's really, really important that that patients make sure they follow up closely with their cardiologist, their primary care doctor, get their bad cholesterol down. And cholesterol is only part of the story. There's inflammation, insulin resistance, visceral fat, metabolic dysfunction. All of these are drive cardiovascular disease. And you can make a huge difference with simple pillars. And this is what I tell my patients. Optimize your thyroid, check your vitamin D, prioritize good sleep, do strength training at least twice a week, reduce visceral fat, which is around your belly, through diet and movement. Keep your ApoB low. Remember, that's the particle count behind the LDL. Keep your A1C, which is your marker of diabetes, below 5.4. Lower inflammation. You can check a lab marker called CRP. And eat fewer ultra-processed foods. You don't need perfection, you just need progress.
What component, why does sleep have anything to do with the equation?
Sleep is linked to linked to increased stressors, increased stress on your body, increased cortisol levels, higher blood pressures. It's really, really important. And the American Heart Association has included that in one of their pillars for living a heart healthy life, getting good, adequate sleep. And I tell my patients, if you find yourself, if your partner tells you you're snoring, you wake up exhausted, you need a nap throughout the day, you should really talk to your doctors about getting a sleep study to see if you have obstructive sleep apnea, because good quality sleep has a lot of downstream consequences. If you have obstructive sleep apnea and you're not treating it appropriately.
Most doctors I know are very busy. Do you get enough sleep?
I have two young kids at home, so I try to get anywhere from 6 to 8 hours of sleep if I can. My wife makes sure I get six to 8 hours, so I'm very fortunate.
That's pretty impressive. Let's go to Rosemary in Poughkeepsie. Rosemary, you're on. Rosemary, I apologize.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah.
That's okay. I have a question. I had a triple bypass 8 years ago. My numbers all seem to be pretty good right now. I asked about getting the LP little a and the APOB and the calcium score test with my doctor, and the answer I got was, what's the point? We know you have heart disease. What is your opinion about that? Should I get those tests?
Sure. No, thank you. Thank you for joining us here. That's a great question. So the calcium score, not so much, right? So we know you've had a bypass. So you've had blockages to the blood vessels that you were born with. And so the surgeons went in and they bypassed the blockages. And so if we do a calcium score, it's going to show us that you're already at high risk because there's already blockages and those blood vessels were bypassed. Regarding the other stuff, however, your lipoprotein A and your ApoB, I think those are important markers because there are medications that are coming out that will reduce that. And if it's elevated for you, you're already a very high-risk patient because you've gone on through life, you've had significant blockages that required open heart surgery to get this done. And it's really, really important that we keep those bypass vessels open and prevent them from being blocked again. ApoB is a good marker to see where your cholesterol levels are. Your lipoprotein A will tell us what your additional risk factor is. Some medications that I've discussed, including the PCSK9 inhibitors and inclisiran, they do lower your lipoprotein A by 25%. We just don't know if that leads to less heart events. And knowledge is power. If your lipoprotein A is up, then you can have your siblings and your kids tested if you have kids. And so I think it tells us a lot of information, and it's something that you should advocate to get.
Rosemary, thank you very much. We'll go to Hudson. Nope, we'll go to Albany and Henry. You're on. Henry, go ahead.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Henry. Yes,
okay,
again.
Yeah. Hey, Doc. Listen, I got a question because I can't seem to find an answer, but I'm on a statin that Rose. Rosuvastatin.
Yep.
Yeah, and then it's hard for me to pronounce these names, but I had a heart catheterization before my total hip replacement, and they put me on metoprolol tartrate. What is that for?
Yeah, so metoprolol is a medication that lowers your heart rate. Do you have any arrhythmias or sometimes blood pressure issues?
I don't have any symptoms of anything, but when I had the heart catheterization because I had to have it before my total hip replacement, and they said I probably should get two stents, right? But they said I could have the operations. I had my total right hip replaced, my total left knee replaced 3 months later, and they just put me on this. It seems to work. I don't have any symptoms of anything. I just don't know what this is for. Huh?
Yeah. No, thank you for that additional information. Knowing that you have blockages in the blood vessels that supply your heart gives me a good context here. So essentially what we're trying to do is manage your heart disease with medication. So oftentimes that's baby aspirin, a high intensity cholesterol lowering medication like the statin that you're on, making sure
that's
your cholesterol
is low. Exactly. That's what I'm on. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And then medications to relax your heart or lower your heart rate and make sure your blood pressure is under control. And metoprolol is one of those. And if you're able to do everything in terms of day-to-day living and you're not having chest pain, maybe you don't need those stents right away. You know, it all depends on what your stress test and things like that show. Now, we've known...
I lost 65 pounds and I'm on the Mediterranean diet, right? Okay. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't know if I should go back or something and say, hey, do I need to get the stents or am I okay?
Well, congratulations on losing all that weight and really turning your life around. So that's great work. Unfortunately, the plaque that's there isn't going away, and so you should definitely follow up with your cardiologist. If you're not having symptoms, not having chest pain, no shortness of breath, it's not affecting your quality of life. What I often do for my patients, if I know where the blockage is, I'll have you do a stress test. See, you know, how big of a blockage, or if, you know, the heart is smart. Sometimes you can grow blood vessels to the area that is blocked, right? And so I would see what you're able to do on the treadmill or through a stress test to see how much blockage there is. Is it affecting your quality of life? And from that, I would decide whether we just medically manage you because you're not seeing symptoms, and then you come back if you're feeling, you know, this is stuff that you've been building up since your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, and so this is not something that occurred overnight. And so I would just monitor you. And if you're feeling symptoms despite being on good medications, then I would send you for a stent if you needed it. Or if your stress test showed that you had a large blockage, or if it was in a critical area that I was really concerned about, then I advise you to get a stent.
Okay, Dr. Sonny Ntwala, we only have about a minute left here. Let's go to Ballston Lake. Howard, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Just want to get your recommendation. I'm 72 years old. I have a pacemaker, which I got about 11 years ago because I had sick sinus syndrome. And then once I had the pacemaker, no problem at all. About 4 or 5 years ago, I had a mild heart attack. And then I went on a bunch of medications, atorvastatin and metoprolol. Recently, about 2 months ago, I was having some problems. I had a heart catheterization done, and they put in two stents.
Okay.
And I had one stent put in 4.5 years ago, and I had a heart attack.
All right, we only have about 30 seconds, Howard. We only have about 30 seconds,
all right.
So let's cut to the chase.
My cholesterol is 116, my HDL is 59, LDL 44. Just want to get your recommendations.
Absolutely. So I would encourage moderate intensity exercise for 150 minutes. Keep your LDL where it is, if not lower. You know, even at 44, you know, with your recurrent heart attacks, the European guidelines say LDL even less than 40. So make sure that you're doing everything you can in terms of cholesterol management. It seems like you're on great therapies. I would just advise exercise and diet on top of that.
Howard,
very close follow-up with your cardiologist.
We got to leave it there. Dr. Sonny Ntwala, splendid job today. And I got to say, you know, we've done a lot of phoners. When during the pandemic, they were all my guests were on phone. You got a good audio. Whatever phone you have, keep it. It sounds great. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Support comes from Berkshire Plastic Surgeons in Great Barrington on Pittsfield, offering skin cancer screenings, Botox, injections, fillers, cosmetic, and reconstructive surgery. BerkshirePlasticSurgeons.com. Thanks again to Dr. Sonny Ntwala of Northwell Health for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Very, very sorry I am if we didn't get to yours. We will do this topic many times to come. So hang in there, and thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Bob Rathbun, the irascible screener of all these phones. Thank you, Bob. Okay, so tomorrow we're going to talk climate change and emerging clean energy technologies with our buddy Dan DeLurie. We'll talk about COP30 and what he learned and everything else. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.